Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Hello, hello, Heritage Radio Network listeners tuning in from 155 countries around the world, about a million listens a month. And I am really super confident that every single one of them is listening to Tech Bytes right now, the weekly show where we talk about the intersection of food and technology. And today we have a full studio. We have so many people, we are splitting headphones. We have six guests. It's an exciting time. We have a panel of people who will be speaking at the Disrupt Food Summit in New York City this Friday. So we will do like we always do before we get into the future of food and what kind of tech is transforming, what consumers want, and all that kind of good stuff. We'll go around the shipping container. We will introduce everybody and ask them our favorite question. What's your favorite app right now? Everybody has one. Even if it's 10 years old, 10 years sitting on your home screen, or something brand new that you just downloaded on the subway on your way in. I actually just downloaded an app today. I downloaded the, this is very funny. How many people saw the Avengers? Everybody's raising their hands. How many people know who Chris Hemsworth is? How many people think he's like super jacked and ripped and fit? Well, Mr. Hemsworth just came out with an app, his own fitness app. It's called Center, C-E-N-T-R. I downloaded it on my iPhone. And I'm really excited to check it out. It's supposed to have like workouts and recipes, and you're supposed to be able to get fit like Chris Hemsworth, which would be a little much for me because I'm short. I'm only 5'4", so to be like super yoked like that might be a little too much. But I'm curious to see what he put in it because I think he is one of the first superhero celebrities to cash in on all the work that he's done to be in those films to get that physique. I mean, I'm sure they Photoshop him a little bit, but I know that there was a lot of chicken and broccoli, a lot of cardio, and a lot of weightlifting. And probably he probably had assistants walking around with the gallons of water he was supposed to be drinking every day. So that's my app, Center. We'll report back and see if it really makes me ripped like a superhero, maybe a few weeks into the season. So, as I said at the top of the show, the Disrupt Food Summit is happening on Friday, and there are a bunch of great panels and discussions, and panels need experts. So we have a bunch of interesting players in the food tech space right now. And first up is Henry Kassendorf, who's the CEO and co-founder of a company called Remedy Organics, which you may have seen in your refrigerator case. Interesting new beverages. Henry, do you have an app that you like right now?
My favorite app, I know it's probably one of the oldest apps in the App Store, but the weather app.
The weather app from the Weather Channel or the one that comes?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Because there's an allergy section.
The pollen index?
The pollen index. Okay. I live by the pollen index.
Okay.
And even with my local honey from bees hives within 10 miles of my home, I still need to know where we are with the pollen count. Mm-hmm. So I live by that pretty much from mid-April to the end of May.
I too love the weather app because I don't believe the forecast. I only believe the map.
That's true. Good
so
point.
I like to go to the weather app and then hit the satellite map because I want to see where that front is coming from and if it's actually coming or not. Because I don't believe the, you know, they're just looking at the map too, weather people. I think it's a good one. Okay. Next to him is Joshua Siegel, who's a general partner at Rubicon Venture Capital. Money makes the innovation world go round for sure. Joshua, do you have an app that you're particularly fond of right now?
So I'm going to go completely on the other side of the spectrum. And I have two children. So the app that is my go-to app is Angry Birds.
Oh.
And specifically Angry Birds Star Wars.
Okay.
My kids are 7 and just about 5. And so it's just a great way to have fun in the house for a couple of minutes. And it also provides a great distraction basically anytime or anywhere.
Excellent.
And it's one of those old school apps that's been on my phone for at least 10 years.
But it has evolved because they didn't have Angry Birds Star Wars.
Right, when they have all kinds of Angry Birds.
So they've franchised.
Specifically, Angry Birds Star Wars 2.
Yeah. Good to know. I didn't even know they had franchised it out. I did think that my reaction to favorite app because you have children and I know you live in New York City. I thought you were going to say like Find My Friend or the LoJack My Kid or, you know, those subtle surveillance apps so parents can keep eyes on their kids.
Right. Well, we haven't LoJacked our kids as of yet. They don't have their own devices during the
day. So that's coming. Okay.
So that would be coming later, but we try not to give them technology, you know, all day, every day kind of thing. And they're both in school, so, you know, they're not allowed to use it in the classroom or things like that. So we try to keep the technology to a minimum, which is tough to do in this day and age.
Okay, well, you can come back later when you get the LoJack app for the kids. Sitting next to him is Julie Lerner, who is speaking on one of the investment panels. She is an investor with a collective called 37 Angels. She's also a writer. She's been on Heritage, not on this show, but other shows, and she's interviewed me, interestingly, in the past for an article for her blog, which was a little turning the tables. Julie, do you have an app that you like right now?
I know I shouldn't say this on the show, but I am like ancient and I am so low tech, but I use Grammarly and Tasty. Those are kind of like my two go-to apps when I need a little like break. And
so
it's just,
when do you use Grammarly? And explain to people what it is, because there's a lot of people who probably don't even understand conceptually the idea of grammar.
It's not perfect actually, but it basically corrects your grammar and your spelling.
For actual writing, not
actually
not
writing. And now
posting
they've kind
or hashtagging.
Of had like version 2 and they've gotten, now they're like getting a little more frisky and like, nah, that doesn't sound good. So they've gotten, it's evolved the app. But I would recommend it. I think I've become a worse speller because I rely on these
autocorrect,
exactly.
Auto spell, auto check, which is very interesting. What it thinks you're trying to say sometimes.
Yes, I've had some interesting autocorrects.
And then you hit send, and you're like, oh, didn't mean to say that. Mm-hmm. Next to her is Julia. Pronounce your last name for me, so I don't just completely say it incorrectly.
Olayinju.
One more time.
Olayinju.
Okay. Thank you. She is the co-founder and CIO of a company called GrubEasy, which is an interesting platform to connect cooks and people. She's also part of the organizational force of the event, yes?
Yes, I am.
So tell us what your favorite app is right now.
Okay, that's a bit of a difficult question for me because I use a lot of apps. And,
okay.
I had to kind of like think through which one will I pick. Slack seems to be my favorite because...
Very popular with the tech entrepreneurial set. Very
yes,
popular.
It just helps you manage communication because you belong to so many groups and so many teams and just being able to organize all your communication in one place is priceless. So yeah, I'll go with Slack.
People love Slack.
Yeah.
Very popular. Next to her, we have Alina. And say your last name for me also. Same thing. Don't want to...
Zolotarova, but you can call me Zolo.
Zolo. Yeah. That's good.
They called me in college.
Zolo. Do you have a special thing like YOLO? Is Zolo something?
No, I just think it was really hard to pronounce my actual last name.
Okay. Okay.
That's like a supervillain last name.
I'm also from the Soviet Union originally, so it makes
sense.
Oh,
yeah, so I must break you. Yeah. Okay. Good. She is with Aero Farms. Mark Oshima, who's the co-founder and CMO, is one of the panelists. He's also been a guest on this show. Aero Farms is really one of the leading indoor farming companies right now. They're doing a lot of interesting work. They're based in New Jersey, which is also interesting. But so tell us, Alina, do you have a favorite app that you like right now?
So I use apps for everything, from paying my friends to getting money back from my friends, mostly the latter. I also love the weather app. I have crazy allergies. But an app that actually I don't do the Tinders and I don't do the Bumble or any of those dating apps. One of the apps that I'm going to download is something called Your Local. which is a brand new food rescue app or food waste reduction app that a friend is a part of. And so I haven't used some of these newer sort of food waste apps, but this is one that I'm going to be downloading this week and trying out.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. They just pitched us at 37 Angels. We didn't go to diligence with them, but I'd be interested to hear about your user experience with them.
What was the pitch? What's the elevator pitch for it?
The pitch for 37 Angels. We have.
No, I understand that. What did they pitch? What was your local's elevator pitch to you?
It wasn't an elevator pitch. They did a full-on pitch to our whole community. And basically, a lot of folks are addressing the food waste, but this was that you could get a discount on the food at the end of the day. So it sounded actually very interesting. They were built out in Sweden or Denmark they're from, mm-hmm. and this was their second city. Mm-hmm. So... I've heard a few pitches around this, so I'd be curious to see how it actually plays out.
I'll look into it. That's interesting. It sounds like it's that last call sale, but digital, mm-hmm. like at your bakery after exactly. 5 p.m. Get 2 for 1, everything's half off, that kind of idea.
Exactly.
Okay, interesting.
Hotel tonight for food.
Mm-hmm. Oh, excellent. Very good. You should be on their pitch team. Maybe they'd be doing better.
Yeah.
So you're really going to want that, salmon sushi at 1 in the morning.
Yeah. All right. Not
salmon
sushi.
on a Monday.
Hey, they sell sushi now at Duane Reade in that refrigerator case when you first walk in, and somebody's buying it at 1 a.m. because most of them are 24 hours. We live in a different world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my pro tip for listeners today is never buy sushi at the drugstore. Unless, caveat, you're in Japan. Then it's okay, because they sell all kinds of crazy stuff at their drugstore, convenience store, gas station, train station. So if you're not in Japan, never buy sushi in a drugstore.
Great advice.
And that's a wrap. So, as I said at the top of the show, we are here to talk about the Disrupt Food Summit. It's really great to get people together before the event and get a sneak peek at what they are going to be talking about. And we have some people here that assembled that represent some of the different panels throughout the day. I think ultimately, it's hard to say, do you start with a product and then go to investment? Do you start with investment and how they fund product? It's sort of a chicken and an egg scenario. But much of what the program is about is sort of circling around those ideas, because we have a lot of discussion happening right now around the world about how to feed people, how to fix the broken food system, how to... create more nutrient-dense, better quality food, how to get it produced, all those kinds of things. And people are talking a lot about it. I don't know that we've reached any actual conclusions or an action list. I think maybe the closest thing that we've come to in terms of solid action items are perhaps starting to utilize blockchain for product chain and shipping and things like that. That seems to be a pretty solid thing. I think the entry of the Impossible Burger into Burger King is a pretty pivotal moment in terms of, turning the ship. But I would love to hear, I'd love to go around the room, and we're going to, sort of do a little bit of a round robin idea and cover off maybe on the panels and the people who are speaking on them, just to get a sense of what you're going to be talking about on Friday. Who thinks that investing comes first, or who thinks product comes first? Just curious. What do you think?
I think it depends on the type of investor you are from that standpoint, because different firms have different investment thesis approach. And so, if you're a very, very early pre-seed or seed stage fund that can afford to invest in someone who has vision of a product,
idea on a piece of paper,
idea
a cocktail
on a piece
napkin.
Of paper, then yeah. That's what you invest in. We at Rubicon, we invest in execution, not concepts.
Julie's shaking her head.
So for us, we require that the entrepreneur, especially in food, has developed the product. Right. We want to see that. That's what we want to see.
So, Henry, you have a product that you developed in your journey. What was the chronology of product investment you know, that kind of thing. What came first?
It's chicken and egg. And, you know, the problem is the savvy investors will want to wait and see some proof points until they write a check. And then there are others who might jump in early based on the concept and the team behind it. We self-funded for a good part of the journey to get those proof points and try to kick the valuation can down the road a bit, raise some capital through friends and family and convertible notes just to kick that, you know, valuation can down the road. But at the right time, we went out for institutional capital. We had the proof points and raised a significant amount of money based on what we had accomplished. But it was a long process to get there, and we self-funded for the first year plus.
So, Zolo, can I call you Zolo? Yeah. Zolo and Henry come from products. Arrow Farms sells lettuce and greens and vegetables, and then Henry has his beverage. So for the two of you, what is your vision of the future of, you know, the next food trend and solving that feeding all the people question? You have a specific vision at Remedy Organics, and you have a specific vision at Arrow Farms, like in 140 characters or less. Mm-hmm. What would you say your future vision is, what you think people need and what you're bringing to them?
Right. Consumers are looking for more out of the products that they buy. They want more than just hydration out of their beverages. They want more than just nourishment from food. And we believe the next frontier of the food and beverage industry is adding function to those products, but in a way that it's clean and nutrient dense and delicious. And that's what our brand is about.
Define function. What would you put under what do people think? We're all consumers and we all drink beverages. I've had many beverages earlier today. What does everybody think when they hear the word function, like functional beverage? What does that mean?
Some of it could be energy, mm-hmm, or the reduction of energy. So like sleep aid. Mm. Certainly hydration is an issue. And then, of course, nutrients.
Protein. Protein's a big one right now.
When Henry came in, I'm like, oh, I want to talk to you. And as a consumer, not as an investor, as a consumer, I'm like, I'm having all of these issues. I'm like, what can your product do for me? So, right. So fit in right exactly to what you're asking. For as a consumer, not as an investor, I'm looking for what some products can help me in energy, digestion, all of these issues.
So nutrient dense, functional, and then you said a word that makes some people crazy, and I hear it all the time. We use it so much, I don't know that anybody really knows what it means. You said clean. What does clean mean in your world when you're talking about food? And then I'd love to hear what that means at Arrow Farms, especially because lettuce can be very dirty.
For us, clean is organic, non-GMO. Clean, a really clean nutrition label with traceability behind the ingredients. And for us, it's just the integrity of the product is critical. And my wife Cindy's a true founder of the business. She's a nutritional health counselor, and this grew out of her practice where she was counseling clients and changing their lives by changing what they ate and how they ate and getting them off dairy and gluten, mm-hmm, and caffeine, mm-hmm, and alcohol. And she wanted to bring this to a broader market. And there was just so much junk in the products that her clients were consuming every day. And for us, you know, it's just table stakes in terms of what goes in that.
What about at Arrow Farms? What's your vision of the food future product?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll speak to a couple of things because we just touched on a lot of different elements. So I'm actually a registered dietitian nutritionist. So my background is in nutritional biochemistry, and that's what I studied, and that's my passion. And I think the functional food movement and all of the current wellness trends, if you will, came out of this need and this demand from consumers, mm-hmm, to get more from their food. Because over the last 50, 60 years, the quality, the nutrient density of our food has plummeted. And a lot of that has to do with the quality of our soil and the food system in general and sort of the supply chain. And when it comes to leafy green vegetables, and as a registered dietitian, first of all, I love Henry's products. I drink Remedy all the time, so I'm a big fan. But
I think we were promised samples in an email.
Oh my God, their products are delicious and they make you feel good. And that's actually what clean and functional means to me. But it goes beyond that. Clean, on the one hand, is the product and what it delivers and what it promises to deliver to the consumer, right? So for us, today leafy greens, mostly are coming from California. They're sprayed with Mexico. They're sprayed with tons of pesticides. You know, you don't really know what you're getting. They're triple washed in like a chlorine bleach solution. Our greens don't have anything sprayed on them. So they are...
Most people think triple washed means what you do when you stand at the sink and just wash it three times with water to make sure.
No, it's a very intensive process. And
it's almost like dry cleaning for your lettuce, actually, is a better analogy.
Exactly. And okay. You're washing off a lot of the pathogens. So it's actually, you know, we have to step back and think, you know, what are we actually washing off there? But it's, as you mentioned earlier, you know, lettuce, quote unquote, is dirty because it is, it's grown in the field, it's grown, it's really hard to trace back the food. Hopefully with blockchain, with other technological developments, we'll be able to get a better traceability on our field-grown produce, but today it's not there.
So how does AeroFarms then articulate all that in the product?
We grow locally all year round.
Locally inside a warehouse.
Locally grown indoors, exactly,
so
all year round.
So local has a very different permutation because it's indoors.
It's indoors. Mm-hmm. We don't use any pesticides ever at all, so it's completely clean and ready to eat straight out of the container. I'll speak to non-GMO. There is no GMO in the leafy greens category today. It's a big, there's a big misunderstanding there, but of course, we use non-GMO seeds. And so the idea is that we grow locally all year round. It's a reliable product for both our customers meaning our retailers, mm-hmm. Whole Foods, ShopRite, FreshDirect, etc. And it's a reliable product for a consumer.
So for the investors then, the interesting thing is you have people who start companies because they have a belief about what they think the problems are and how they think they can best answer them. And they put products into market.
Jennifer, before you go into that, I want to just touch on what they just talked about, both of them. And by the way, I also like their products a lot, Remedy Organics. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about the concept of what the whole idea of future of food. What do we see? You know, I like the angle they started with, the problems we have today. And that's one of the reasons why I thought about coming up with this event, bringing people together to talk about the issues and the way forward. And one of the key things is that we have a huge problem today. We have 52% of Americans dealing with health issues. That's 171 million people that have preventable chronic diseases that are related with poor eating patterns and physical inactivity. So when we think about the issues we have, we think about how can we solve these issues? There are a lot of transparency problems with the food industry. People will tell you, oh, this brand or this product is low sugar, and then you buy it and you find out that it's just full of it's just different from what you expect. So when all these issues are in the marketplace and people are tired of seeing the same thing repeating itself over and over again, there's a need for industry leaders to come together and say, no, we're changing things. We're talking about, number one, we identify with the problem and we're seeing this is how we're going to solve the problem. So that's kind of like when I think about the future of food and generally when people talk about what they expect in the marketplace, it's more of going to the store and seeing better options, more good for you product to pick from, not just a few brands doing what we expect, but many brands doing providing what people need and putting consumers' well-being first. You know, thinking about, oh, this is good for the market, this will get me money, but it's also good for the consumers.
Well, the interesting thing is that we don't often see quite that many people from large, well-established CPG companies doing the same thing at the forefront. All of the, I'm sure, you know, the investors that we have sitting here, and when we'll get to the investment piece, you're not investing in Unilever. You're investing in a small company, a husband and wife who have an idea. So it's interesting because these things are starting in smaller places and then driving forward. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how the investors maybe are making the decision about what the solutions are. They're the first people who, the first wave of voting with your dollars. So we'll talk about that when we come back from the break. Stay with us and find out who has voted with their company dollars to support Heritage Radio Network. Did you know we're a 501c3 nonprofit and we are celebrating our 10th anniversary this year? We've been on the air from the backyard of Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn since 2009. And we have kept the lights on and the mics hot out of the generosity of grants, members who are mostly listeners like you, and amazing companies like this one. Stay with us.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Well, if you're just joining us and you're wondering what the hell you clicked on, this is Tech Bites, the weekly show on the Heritage Radio Network, where we talk to innovators and influencers in the food tech space. Are you a startup entrepreneur? Do you run an accelerator? Do you have just a really great idea? Does your friend have a cool app? Get in touch with us. We are always looking for new stories and new voices. Tech Bites has been on the air since January 2015. This is episode 175. We got a lot of airtime to fill, people, so get in touch. You can email us, techbites@heritageradionetwork.org. Social media, techbites, HRN. Get in touch. Become a member. Send us something. We're very interactive. So today, our innovators and influencers are all participants in the upcoming Disrupt Food Summit. You can find information online, still tickets available, at 2019.disruptfoodsummit.com. It is on May 17th in New York City. It's a whole day of interesting events, discussions, networking. And today we have assembled a bunch of the participating panelists. We have product CEOs and founders and innovators, and we have investors, which is the piece that we're getting to right now. I think, especially in the American market, especially when it comes to food products, we always say people vote with their dollars. And the first people who vote with their dollars are the investors. If they don't vote first, you may never get a chance to. So representing the investor panel, we have Joshua Siegel, who is at Rubicon Venture Capital, and Julie Lerner, she is with 37 Angels, an investment cohort, group, collective, collaborative? Yeah. How would you describe it?
It's a work group about 80 female angel investors.
So the 37 is a misnomer.
It is misnomer, but the founders, Angela Lee, she's the Associate Dean of Innovation at Columbia Business School, and she started it and about 5 years ago. And at the time, only 13% of investors were women at angel level, at VC level. Now it's actually gotten better. I think it's in the low 20s. So that's why she called it 37 to balance it out.
That's interesting. That's another show. We've done shows in the past about women, with women founders and CEOs, and the whole quandary about funding. But that said, you will both be speaking on investing in food and drinks, current trends, and future directions. So what are you both interested in right now in terms of future investments? Is there a particular category? Is there a topic? Is there a problem you're specifically interested in, companies that are trying to solve this problem?
So we've invested in the frozen food space, and we've invested in the beverage space, and we've looked at a lot of foods in various other spaces. The issue for us is we want to find companies that are attacking a problem that's, you know, daily and or weekly. So something that's going to be consumed either every day or every other day. And we like to find things that really eliminate or limit sugar intake. That's a big thing that I'm looking at. So even the natural sugars that are in certain foods, so like dates is used as a binder in a
whole
lot of foods,
but
it's a lot of sugar in them. And sugar is one of the worst things that you can put in your body. And so I like to see foods that really eliminate that. But I don't necessarily like to see foods that are using, you know, the stevias of the world and sugars like that. One of the items that we like to see is monk fruit, which is a different kind of molecule.
Very popular right now.
So it's not counted as a sugar, according to the FDA. So we're looking at stuff like that, clean items, things of that nature. Stuff that also has low impact into the environment. So I'm not a big proponent of the, you know, food kits and things of the world, because a lot of shipping that's involved there.
I've never done meal deliveries on my show because I like people to have a good experience, and it's not meet the press. I don't have to ask the super hard questions, but it's really hard for me to turn the corner on the packaging and the impact and the delivery and all those kinds
of
things.
So as long as the packaging has limited impact, then it's okay. There are some, you know, pre-prep food companies that do that, but others that really have a high waste quotient, you know, aren't really great. And I think, you know, recently Albertsons, they had bought plated years ago, and now they've basically eliminated it from their stores for the most part. And so they may have found that it just doesn't work all that well. So, you know, that's a challenge, right? But we really want to find stuff where the founders are challenging the norm. They are not only being disruptive to the environment, but they're really attracting the consumer's tastes. And the reason why we wouldn't invest in something like Unilever is that the thought process that goes on in a big multinational conglomerate from even an innovation team or something like that is do no harm, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm here. I want to keep my job. I don't want to do any harm.
So do no harm for themselves and their career, not do no harm for the planet and people. Because do no harm is a you know, disruptive entrepreneur mantra, which is about being good to the planet. It's also, I think, part of the ethos of Burning Man, for example.
Right. It means different things to different people. But in the case of Unilever, it means let me keep my job.
Right.
Don't do anything that would get me fired. For entrepreneurs, it means let's try to, you know, fix a problem or attack a problem without hurting anyone else. I'll break a few rules, but other than that, you know, that's okay.
Julie, what's your cohort looking for in terms of products and things? Is there something specific you're interested in or that you think is really the future?
We actually at 37 News do more tech. I'm kind of the food person, so I'm kind of bringing in more food companies. But I do want to say something about the companies like Unilever, which I think is positive for new food companies. These larger companies are less doing their research and development, their R&D.
They just buy stuff. They just buy stuff, like Sir Kensington or Vitamin Water.
I interviewed.
They might buy you.
Sir Kensington.
M&A is the new R&D.
Yeah.
But that's an opportunity.
That was great, by the way. Register mark that, yeah.
Right. For these food companies coming up, because they don't want to do it in-house. And right, they're going out and buying these companies. So that's of huge interest to us.
So that's of huge interest to you, that they go out and buy the company. So when you look at a company, you're thinking forward about if they're potentially going to be purchased, scooped up by a CPG.
Absolutely. This is a different vertical, but I just invested.
So that's a true investment protocol.
Well, yes. Mm-hmm. I just invested in an e-commerce clothing company for men 5'8 and under. And I went to my university event, alumni event, and the founder of Bonobos is there. So I went up and talked to him, and all of a sudden I'm talking to someone at Walmart because they bought Bonobos in 2 years ago, and they're just adding mm-hmm. brands. So
Walmart actually just launched a frozen entree line with Whole30, Whole30 approved. And when you talk about eliminating different things.
Right. So there are a bunch of companies that are doing that right mm-hmm. now. Freshly is another mm-hmm. company that does that, and they're doing quite well. They got an investment from Nestle, I think last year, of like $75 million or some crazy number. So, and we're invested in a frozen company as well, Daily Harvest, which is all mm-hmm. fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. So frozen is a great category. It's a big category. It's billions of dollars. The great thing about frozen, especially when you're using a lot of vegetables and fruits, forgetting about meat for a minute, is there's very little waste because everything is flash frozen at ripeness on the farms. So in any frozen dish, there's very little waste in that, which is good.
You're talking about a very, very specific type of product and process beyond just what we think of when we think frozen.
Well, any frozen food that has vegetables in it, the vegetables were frozen already probably. So when they were delivered to the manufacturer for processing, they were already frozen.
So just a general question. Do you think that all of the investors and accelerators and incubators and people who are supporting startup companies on a, you know, financial and, you know, intent and advisory level, are they the true people who are making the decisions about what the new food products are and what the new trends are?
No.
No.
Definitely not. First of all, there's so many different kinds of investors out there, mm-hmm. but the entrepreneurs are the ones that are doing the work, right?
But what if you have a great product that doesn't make it to see the light of day?
No.
The world is littered with great products that don't see the light of day,
exactly.
Unfortunately.
Exactly.
I think the most important person here is the entrepreneur. You know, mm-hmm. A lot of people think when you have an idea, you can't push it forward unless an investor backs you. You can, because there are many ways to move things forward now. People are not going to crowdfunding. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to have someone with a big, big check. But when you have many people with checks and they support you, and you have at least the initial fund to get things mm-hmm. off the ground. Mm-hmm. So the most important person is an entrepreneur, because the person needs to persevere and stay in the game. The fact that you have a good idea doesn't mean it's going to work immediately. Nothing good works immediately. You just have to kind of like push forward until you have enough to show institutional investors to say, okay, yeah, you know, this thing works. Do you want to invest? And even if they say no, you keep going until something works out. But what I'm trying to point out here is this. If the entrepreneur gives up before even get the product is ready for the investor, nothing, it won't see the light of day. So who determines if it sees the light of day? The entrepreneur does, by pushing forward and looking for alternatives.
Okay, and then ultimately the entrepreneur needs buy-in from some kind of consumer base to show traction or sales or...
Certainly with a consumer product that's a consumable, somebody has to eat it and buy it.
Right.
So you have to do that. But in today's day and age, where there's a lot more angel investors and early stage investors, you don't need one funding source. Mm-hmm. You can go to multiple mm-hmm. funding sources, and eventually you'll get there. But initially, you have to find people that believe in you mm-hmm. and your product. And that's not always easy. It's a very hard thing to do.
So let's go around the room, and everybody just tell us, what do you think the big future trend is that you're looking at, that you're either looking to capitalize on, that you're looking to invest in? Maybe it's something you haven't found yet. Maybe you think it's on the beginning of the upswing. Maybe you think it's going to take 5 or 10 years for it to really fully materialize. One of the speakers on the panel who was just on the show a few weeks ago is Victor Panoff from Adam, and they are nutritional information. They work with other companies by providing really deep nutritional data information analysis. It's really interesting. And he thinks that it's really personalized, functional human nutrition, where you're wearing a device that's telling you what your body composition is right now and what you actually need to be eating, and then it'll give you a recipe for the ingredients that are in your refrigerator and you can eat it, and that all the technology exists, and it'll take 10 years for it to get harnessed together to function like that. So let's start with you, Henry, to see. You're making the products.
We are. What we see is the convergence of the food and beverage and health and wellness industries. And that's driving a lot of the growth, especially in our business.
I think that convergence is here. It's happened already, right?
It's happening more and more every day as you see product. I mean, I was in Sephora with my wife over the weekend, and they're selling collagen products that go in your beverages, where they've traditionally been makeup and beauty products. So,
and that's beauty starts from the inside.
That's true. Yeah. We wrapped up Expo West a couple of weeks ago, a month ago, and typically I spend the last day of the show meeting with suppliers. Every single one of our suppliers was on, there's a line of embarkation at Expo East and Expo West. It's the food and beverage companies and the supplements. And every one of our suppliers was on the other side
Interesting.
Of that line.
Interesting.
And you know, this has been going on for a few years now. Mm-hmm. And when we first started having these conversations, they were used to putting these ingredients into a capsule and weren't used to someone formulating beverages with it or other products. And now it's become very commonplace and that it is here. And it's just the beginning.
Joshua, what are you looking for? What do you think the trend is? I mean, you already kind of told us frozen,
well, that's
daily,
a trend
weekly
for certain foods, but on a bigger level, I think the trend is for education to catch up with reality and that the government, at least in the U.S., is still propagating the myth of the food pyramid, which has no business in our world today. I mean, the food pyramid is total
sad,
garbage.
The standard American diet.
And so I think the need is to eliminate much of the food lobby from the process of educating our kids, and that there needs to be sort of a reintroduction of home economics into basic curriculum all over about what really is good for you, what you should be eating. Because at the school level, kids are very impressionable. They'll basically believe anything you tell them if you're a teacher. If you're a parent, they don't believe anything you tell them. But if you're a teacher and you're standing in front of a classroom, you know, with a chalk, then you have a lot of influence. And so I think it's very important that kids be educated on what they should be eating, why it's good for you, the green leafy vegetables, things of that nature, nutrition, and, you know, getting away from a more grain-based diet that has been propagated into our society, really all over the world, and is not good for you, really, in any manner, shape, or form. So education is critical, I think.
Okay. Julie? What are you?
I would say centralized kitchens. This whole cloud kitchens concept. One of our companies at 37 Inches is called So Ripe, and they do healthy lunch delivery to a bunch of different companies around the city, New York City, and they're expanding to Los Angeles. So they're doing economies of scale. So they're doing the same healthy. There's two fitness guys who are super great operators.
Are they using the Chris Hemsworth app?
No, but they look like Chris Hemsworth. They are super handsome. We just go and we have investor meetings. And anyway, but this whole economies of scale, and they're doing, you know, this, everyone's getting the same meal, and I think we're going to see this with a lot of companies. So offsite, no brick and mortar, unfortunately, but it's a great way of doing business.
Julia?
Yes, I would really piggyback on what Joshua just talked about. I really think that there's a need for people to understand why. Why is this good? This food good for me? And it's not just the need. People are also seeing the need. There was a data I was just looking at recently that was published. 87% of the people, they surveyed 1,500 people about the need for transparency and education, and 87% of them said that they would prefer any product that provides more information than the information on the label to them. Before making their choices, they want to know more about what they're eating. That shows an hunger in the hearts of people. Consumers are more knowledgeable than ever before, and there's still more hunger for knowledge. I believe kids should know more. They should know, at a very early age, know why a particular a food type is good for them. It's not good enough to just say, oh yeah, just eat that. It's just because I said so. There's a need to educate people, and I feel we're going to employ technology more to educate people and see what they're looking for, what they need to know, and help them learn more. So to answer your question, what's the future of food? I believe people will learn more, would be more eager to learn, and there'll be more tools, more technological tools to help them learn easily. And that would definitely drive changes in the marketplace as well.
Alina, what's the future of food look like down at Arrow Farms?
Definitely. So I'll step back, and I do go to Burning Man. So in the spirit of Burning Man, I'll say, we create our future. And I think it's really, really important for all of us. There's trends, and then there's the kind of like the codends of the trends that we're riding on. But then there's the creation and the conscious, I'm sorry to use this word to my boss, Mark, but the conscious manifestation of our future together, collectively. And I think when it comes to, it kind of goes along with what we've all been talking about with personalization and wanting to kind of get what we want when we want it. Along with that, when it comes to agriculture and food production, specifically when it comes to local food production, you know, we can, using indoor farming and using high-tech methods of farming that aren't actually, that don't have a negative impact or as much of a negative impact on our environment, we could really steward biodiversity. We can grow hundreds, thousands of different varieties of plants, of food, and introduce really interesting varieties into the marketplace in a really major way. And what that's also introducing is new nutrients, new polyphenols, new antioxidants, new flavors, new stories. And we can actually like save a lot of the issues that are happening today in the environment, and do it locally, and do it in a really big way. So it's kind of hard to wrap your head around it, but I see a future where we can have access to all sorts of varieties of food and plants right in our own backyard.
Right in our own backyard. That's a good place to land. We are out of time, unfortunately. It always goes by too quickly. I want to thank everyone for coming out to Brooklyn. Again, if you want to see these people in real life, go to 2019.disruptfoodsummit.com. Get a ticket for the Disrupt Food Summit, which is happening on May 17th in New York City. That's this Friday. You can meet Henry Kassendorf from Remedy Organics. You can find him at remedyorganics.com. Joshua Siegel from Rubicon Venture Capital. RubiconVentureCapital.com?
Rubicon.vc.
Great. Julie Lerner, 37 Angels. Where can we find you online?
At 37angels.com. We have a pitch forum upcoming next
Perfect.
Month if anyone would like to apply.
We did a bunch of live pitch shows with a VC guy last year, which was
fun.
Super fun. We might revive that because the pitch show is great. It's like a little mini Tech Byte Shark Tank. Julia
Olaiju,
who is the founder and creator of the event. You can find her at the event. And Alina Zolo at Arrow Farms. They are arrowfarms.com. You can find us, Tech Bytes. I don't know if you notice, this is a brand new time. We are live on the air on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. After that, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting platform. I am Jennifer Liuzzi, your host and producer. Matt Peterson is our engineer. The amazing techno theme song, Nomad a CPU Track, is from DJ Uptown Nico. You can find him on SoundCloud and fun musical venues around the city and sometimes out at big events like Bonnaroo. Heritage Radio Network is in the backyard of Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn since 2009. Come back and listen. Find us online. Visit us online. And if you really like the show, click the beating heart, donate some money, become a member, and help us go into the next 10 years. I'm Jennifer Liuzzi, and this is Tech Bytes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. for our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family and become a member. Thanks for listening.